Welcome to episode 20 of Pod Your Own Adventure. Today's episode, Knight of the Necromancer by Jonathan Green. Welcome back to Pod Your Own Adventure. My name's Tom, and an interesting fact about me is that I'm half Maltese on my mum's side. I'm joined today by web developer and CEO in training, Amy Jarbo. Hello, how's it going?
Jarbo works too. That's the way our name was pronounced.
Oh, great. Sorry, I'm bad at this.
No worries.
I'm good at this, it turns out.
Yeah, well, you're much better than the people who have used Jarbok. Jarboe happens often.
I suppose Jarboe makes more sense. I can see why they say it instead of Jarbok, but...
Yeah, a lot of typos.
Getting it all wrong. How you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
I'm pretty good. Yeah, do you have an interesting fact?
I do. My interesting fact that usually makes people howl with laughter is in college, I was shot by a blowgun dart on purpose.
Oh my god. So wait, what happened? Did you know the person shooting you with the...
No,
you didn't know them?
I was walking into a mall and now I went to college in East Tennessee. So... some kids were just playing hooky that day and decided to go around shooting people. They shot another guy, like, the store over. There was, like, a Walmart next door. The dart actually went all the way through his wallet and into his ass. And then they drove around, looped around, and I was walking into the mall, and they just shot me with it.
Shot you.
Yeah.
Lovely.
It was not pleasant. Kind of hurt. Actually ended up chipping my hip bone because, yes, they were shooting everybody in the ass. That was the year Shrek came out. So when the scene with the "there's an arrow in your butt" happened, everybody who knew me in the theater turned around and looked at me and started laughing.
Oh no. I suppose that's one kind of reputation at least, but probably not one that you want to keep.
Yeah, something I never thought I would bring up on a podcast 14 years later.
That's a good story. Did you say that they were driving around? Because I quite like to imagine that they were like hiding in a bush or something in the mall.
No,
like...
they were driving around. There were three of them in a white car, and thankfully they were stupid enough to go back to the same mall the next day. And I'd given a good enough description of the car that security was like, "Hey, three guys in this car that matches the description. Can we go check out your car?" And they still had like the hunting darts and the blowgun and everything in the back seat.
That's stupid, and I'm glad they got caught.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, like the way you described it at first made it seem like they were kind of like waiting in the bushes and just like leaning out, like hunting style, shooting them and slinking back in.
No, it was very urban hunting.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm glad that they weren't
drive by blow
darts.
Darting. I'm just glad they didn't hit higher. That's bad enough as it was.
Yeah. I suppose they probably got quite good aim then if they managed to hit that guy's wallet, you know?
Yeah, well, and imagine how it is for me, though, every time somebody asks, "Now, why do you have a little bit of a limp?"
Oh really?
I told you they chipped my hip bone.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, you've got like a 6-inch steel dart, and they buried it. I didn't have a wallet stopping it.
Yeah. That's why you should keep a copy of the Bible close to hand at all times, of course.
I thought that only stopped bullets.
Oh, yeah, it's useless against blow darts. If you're ever going anywhere with hunting tribes, don't bring a Bible with you. That's what we've learned. I think you need a sheriff's badge for that. Right, so this is really silly.
This is definitely the longest conversation I've ever had about my ass that wasn't, like, part of a date or something.
Do you explain about that story whilst you're on a date as well?
Well, or... I mean, I kind of have to tell people eventually, because it's one of those injuries where, you know, the weather gets bad and it starts hurting and aching and I start limping more. And again, that's just really awkward to try to explain to people.
Yeah.
You know, and at some point, you know, they meet my family and it does come out.
Hmm, fair enough. Well, at least if it's a lifelong injury, at least it's a funny one.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I can really
Lots
say about
of laughs
that,
to be had.
Big yucks all around. Okay. So this podcast normally isn't talking about injuries that you're going to live with and butts. Normally it's about I take an old style multiple path game book. I'll read through it with a guest, in this case Amy. Hello. And
hi.
Together we will make choices and do jokes along the way. So, because this is a fighting fantasy book, we start off with making up our character.
Ooh.
So, right, we're going to roll some dice for this.
I left all my dice in the living room.
That's okay, I've got a couple here.
Oh, okay.
Let's just hope I don't lose them like I did last episode. Whoops.
I just have a big jeweled box that I keep them in the living room, and every time I find dice, I just drop them in the box.
See, that sounds exactly like something that plays tabletop RPGs, yeah.
Yeah. I used to work in a gaming store, and I just kind of got used to see dice, pick it up all the time.
Fair enough, yes. Keeping it tidy. Right, so, in that case, we've got 3 stats which we need to roll for, and another stat which is just going to be there for a while. So, to figure out our skill, which is how good we are with swords and stabbing and not getting stabbed, we roll 1 die and add 6 to it, or d6 plus 6, if you will. We rolled 3, so we've got a skill of 9, which is... It's alright.
How will that fare against blow darts?
Well, I don't know if there are any in this one, actually, so...
Okay.
It's going to be...
Whew! Safe.
It's full of twists and turns. I don't expect it would be, because I think we're just going to be fighting lots of dudes with swords and shields. And board, you know? So, stamina, which is how good we are at getting kicked in the head, is 2d6 plus 12.
Oh, no.
For that one. So that's going to be 17. That's still not too bad, and considering that we're using the Vorpal Sword rules that I've made up for this.
I'm sorry, the Vorpal Sword rules?
Vorpal Sword, yeah, basically, when you have a fight with somebody in this, you have to roll several times to try and wear down their stamina. But that's not very interesting for the people at home, so I'm just going to say we've got a sword that can kill people instantly. And they don't, so it makes it a lot easier.
Okay.
And roll 1 die, add 6 to that, and that is our luck. Seven.
You're not making, very encouraging noises when you roll these dice.
Well, I'm not getting very encouraging results. I'm sorry.
You need to be nicer to your dice.
Okay, I'll give this one a kiss and try that one again.
Yeah, it works.
Rub it a few times.
Tell it sweet things.
I love you. I roll a 1 again.
Oh!
It doesn't work. Tabletop RPG players are the most superstitious people that you will ever meet. Like, more so than gamblers.
Yeah. But that's one reason I would get so many dice working in the gaming store, because people would just throw them on the ground all the time. They would be like, I can't use this one anymore.
Yeah. I remember one time I had a D20, and I was, like, rolling it around my hand for about 30 seconds. And one person said to me, like, what are you doing? And I said, it makes the roll higher. If you keep doing this, then it will end up being, like, more successful roll. It's happened to me before. It said, that's ridiculous. So I rolled it, and I got a 20. So,
yep.
What I'm saying is, the method works. We also start off with a will of 6, but that isn't particularly explained what's going to be. Oh, okay, and it says here, your will is a measure of your determination and strength of purpose. Your will score differs from your other attributes because it's not increased by an initial score. So that's just going to be something that will either go up or go down.
Or the story depends on it so much that they're not going to let us fuck it up with a bad roll.
Well, maybe. Yes. This is, this is our first time reading one of these books by Jonathan Green. They seem to go like quite in depth into the RPG mechanics. I think he is a game designer as well. Well, I mean, they all are. Ian Livingston, Steve Jackson were the guys that stuck.
We're all game designers in our hearts.
Oh, that's really uplifting. Yeah, Ian Livingston and Steve Jackson founded Games Workshop, I believe. I'm going to check that, make sure that it's right. If it's incorrect, I'm going to edit this out.
Yeah, let's do that.
So, we've rolled our character. We may have already lost. Let's find out. Alright, so this has got a small spiel before it gets into the game book, so let's get ready. As the sun sets, a ball of molten iron sinking into the chill waters of the Diamond Sea, you catch sight of Valsinor at long last. With a shout of Yah, you kick your heels into your horse's heaving flanks and spur it on towards the distant castle.
Yah! Sorry, I'm getting into character.
Sorry, this is fully appropriate. By nightfall, you will be home. You've been away a long time. 3 years, in fact. 3 years following the crusading banner of the Knights of Telak. 3 years spent in the accursed lands of Bathoria, domain of demons, and the Lords of Night. 3 years fighting the forces of darkness. In that time, you've faced all manner of evils and found yourself in all kinds of life-threatening situations. In fact, you almost lost your life on more occasions than you care to remember. But you survived everything that the forces of darkness could throw at you, from an ambush by a pack of werewolves, the seductive enchantments of the Sepulchral Sisterhood, thanks in part to your knightly skills and prowess in battle, but also thanks to your sanctified, charm-wrought sword knightslayer.
Now all that is left is to come home and reclaim your home from the suitors who are attempting to woo your wife.
Don't get me started about The Odyssey. My brother could talk about The Odyssey for an hour, and has done. Like, the bit with the wife is actually really funny, because the suitors were going to take her hand, and then, after they had the power to the country, kill her. So what she did was she started weaving a tapestry, and said, once this tapestry is finished, I will take somebody's hand in marriage. So what she did for 10 years was she started weaving it, and then undid everything she did that day.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody noticed.
Well, that's what I love, because people talk about, you know, there's this idea that women are totally weak and helpless. And the thing is, when you know, though, what is expected and know how to manipulate that, you can totally screw up a bunch of guys' plans for 10 years and save your, you know, house and save your husband using nothing outside of what they expected you to do.
It's really good. Also, I'm just going to say, like, one of the things in here was the seductive enchantments of the sepulchral sisterhood, which we managed to...
I'm kind of impressed how you can say that. Actually, can you do that one more time?
Sepulchral sisterhood.
Well, I meant the whole phrase, but that works too.
Seductive enchantments of the sepulchral sisterhood. Like...
.tumblr.com.
That's a good blog, actually. I'd follow that. This book comes with several pre-made characters as well. And one of them's a lady. And, like, these are always gender-neutral books, but also there's seductive women's in it at the start. Mm-hmm. Like, so that's what I'm saying is, that's kind of weird for a book aimed at teens. But you know what? I'll take it. Anyway, now, at last, your home is in sight once more. 3 years ago, you set out from Valsinor Castle on the northern coast of Ruddlestone to join in the crusade to purge Bathoria of the malign influence of the Cult of Death. With the defeat of the Death Mage Thanatos, your sworn oath fulfilled, you are free to return home. This is, like, proper high fantasy. I'm really getting into this now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we've had... A lot of the books we've had on before have been quite fantasy, but this is, like... Ruddlestone, the Cult of Death, Bathoria. Oh,
well, you know they're serious when they name the Mage of Death after death itself.
Yes. As you recovered from your last battle at a hospice of the White Lady, you sent letters by messenger ahead of you telling your imminent homecoming, writing one to your sister, Oriana, who was anxiously awaiting news of your safe return, and another to your chamberlain, Unthank, who you had left to look after your estates and safeguard the people of the Sourstone Peninsula while you were away. Again, there's the high fantasy creeping in. And there is one other who you are eager to see again after so long, your faithful hound, who you left to watch over both the castle, but more particularly Oriana. The sky purpling like a...
So wait, you're really excited to see your sister, but you're also really excited to see your hound. But oh yes, just slightly less than your sister, I promise.
Sure. Let's just say that we're less excited to see our dog than we are to see our sister. The dog isn't named, though. Did you think that we get to pick our dog's name?
Oh, really?
Maybe. Let's find out. Anyway, the sky purpling like a bruise as dusk descends. I like that.
That's ominous.
Yeah. The sky purpling like a bruise as dusk descends. You guide your steeds down off the bleak moorland road towards Valsinor Castle, not once taking your eyes off your ancestral home. It is clearly visible now, an imposing silhouette of rising battlements and looming towers. You can also see the village of Sleeth that lies close to the castle, in the shadow of the fortress, and before that, to the west, the brooding expanse of Wraithwood. To the east, the bleak, windswept moors continue as far as the eastern cliffs of the Sourstone Promontory. But before you reach home, the Moot Road takes you through the desolate wilderness that the ancient tribal people of these lands once called home. Northern Ruddlestone still bears the marks left by these ancient warrior clans. Burial mounds dot the landscape, along with time-worn druidic stone circles. You gallop past one such circle of standing stones, known locally as the Nine Maidens, as the dusk continues to deepen around you, desperate to be home now after such a long time away. But it is in this treacherous twilight that the trap is sprung. Oh no.
There we go.
It's all going wrong.
Well, I mean, you know it's going to go wrong, because how many people look at the sunset and go, what a lovely sky. It looks just like a bruise.
A bruise, yeah. Well, it's a nice turn of phrase. And I suppose the thing is, we've been doing a whole 3 years of war. Maybe we've still got a bit of it on our mind.
True. Just,
how are you doing today? Oh, I'm alright, yeah. Do you want me to talk about the war for a few more days? Not really. Anyway... Three men, dark hoods pulled up over their heads to hide their faces, burst from their hiding places among the standing stones and come at you, armed with swords and axes. Your steed whinnies and rears up on its hind legs in surprise. Exhausted after your long ride, you are thrown from the saddle and land hard on the cold ground. Your horse panics and gallops away as your attackers bear down on you, weapons raised. That didn't
That was a
anything.
Bad war horse. Our real horse was killed in battle.
I assume that must have been it, and they just gave us, like, a company horse.
Yeah.
For us to deal with, like, yeah.
It's summer retirement horse.
Done with the war, gonna go home and like, look at pictures of my family one day before retirement. But then this happened and we got stabbed, I guess.
We're scrambled to your feet.
Yeah, you scramble to your feet, your sword Night Slayer ready in your hand. Ruffians like these shouldn't give you any real trouble, even in your weary state. But as the men close in on you with murder on their minds, you notice the fourth member of their band for the first time as he appears to coalesce from out of the gathering darkness. He is dressed from head to toe in long black robes, his face hidden behind a grotesque skull mask. The man does not appear to be armed, but in one hand he is holding a glowing sphere of amethyst that seems to swell with gathering storm clouds. You have encountered his kind before, during your crusade to Bathoria. He is an acolyte of the priesthood of death himself. As you keep a watch on him out of the corner of your eye, you prepare to meet the would-be assassin's assault. They are no match for your knightly skills, and you have soon dealt all of them flesh wounds. In a few minutes, the battle will be over. But before you can finish the fight, the Death Mask cultist casts his spell. Ugh, don't like this. Ball of crackling black light explodes from the acolyte's crystal, forms into a spear of energy that flashes past the beleaguered murderers and hits you full in the chest. You experience a moment of intense pain like you have never known before.
If only they'd hit us in the head, the trolls could have saved us.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I want to get hit by this. Maybe we could get hit in the butt by this. And then...
Oh! That was low!
Sorry. You experience a moment of intense pain like you have never known before as the spell hurls you back onto the road again. And then the pain is gone, leaving you feeling numb and cold. Who has done this to you and why, when you're so close to home at last?
What? I'm confused that he's confused, because didn't he just say, I recognized all of this, I've spent time fighting people just like this, but who has done this to me, and why, during my 3 years away, you know, defending my homeland from people like this?
I'm sure, like, if you spend 3 years fighting people, you're probably going to make a few grudges as well, you know?
Chances are.
Yeah. Anyway. You waste no time in getting to your feet and bringing your sword to bear once more. Your assailants suddenly stagger away from you, expressions of abject fear on their faces. Only the Death Acolyte appears unperturbed. You're used to intimidating your enemies. You have never received quite such a reaction before. One of the men keeps looking down at the ground and then back up at you again, a look of utter disbelieving horror on his face. In fact, he looks like he's seen a ghost. Oh.
I think I know what's happening.
Curious to know what it is that has the thugs so shaken. You glance down at the ground too. Bathed in an eerie luminescence is what appears to be a body. Judging by the scorched, ragged hole in the middle of its chest, you would guess that it is dead. For how could anyone survive such a grievous injury? It is only then that you realise that the body you are staring at aghast is your own.
Dun,
I love
dun,
this shit.
Dun.
I love this. Standing over your dead body, you are a glowing, ethereal copy of yourself. Your ghostly form is dressed in the same apparel as your corpse, and you're even wielding a phantasmal duplicate of your sword Night Slayer, although the real thing is still lying on the ground next to your lifeless body. The shock you feel at realizing that you're dead is nothing compared to the rage and desire for revenge that consumes you now. There will be a reckoning.
Well, at least
he
didn't leave us unarmed.
Yeah, that was polite of them, at least.
That was very kind.
There will be a reckoning this night, when all those responsible for your untimely death will be made to pay for the evil they have perpetrated against you. Screaming like a banshee, you move to engage your murderers in a battle. So, as you stalk towards the murderous thugs, one of the men gives voice to a terrified scream. Another drops his weapon, his face draining of all colour, turns tail and flees. Another drops his weapon in shock, while the third lets out a whimper of fear and collapses to his knees, sobbing like a baby. Only the Death Acolyte... Sorry, go.
I was gonna say, if they're running around with the Death Acolyte, shouldn't they be, like, a wee bit prepared for this? This should be, like, in the basic training somewhere.
Yeah, like, you may have to deal with ghosts if you hang out with the Death Acolyte.
But might be warning necromancy.
That's, like, the first lesson of hanging with the Death Acolytes, is that that you may be involved with, like, death and stuff, I guess?
I thought it was just a name. You know, Death Acolyte, like he dealt death to everybody.
The guy's got a leather jacket that says Death Acolyte and studs in the back of it. These are his motorcycle crew. Only the Death Acolyte appears to be holding things together, his hand moving over his crystal ball, his lips performing the words of some esoteric invocation, no doubt. These men are responsible for your death, and you will have vengeance upon them. But which will you confront first? The three terrified murderers, or the spell-casting Death Acolyte? So we've got our first choice.
Okay, so do we want to take the ads out first, or are we going to focus on the boss?
Well,
Because, I mean, they could pull their shit together and realize, hey, I might have signed up for this. There was some kind of mention at the end of training.
Yeah. But it's a power play, isn't it? Like, going straight for the main guy and stabbing him in the face. That's basically what happens in that bit in The Fifth Element, isn't it? We're negotiating. Who do you want to stab, then?
I say we take out the little scared guys while we can.
Okay.
If they run off, the better.
Yeah, fair enough. Screaming like a banshee, you launch yourself at the terrified ruffians who try to run from you You launch yourself at the terrified ruffians who try to run from before your unearthly wrath. In desperation, they fight back, but even when one of them manages to get a strike in under your guard, the assassin's weapon simply passes straight through your ethereal body as if it were nothing but mist, and you do not feel a thing. You know what? Being undead's not so bad. This is working out, actually.
Yeah, but what just occurred to me, though, is what if they don't actually run away and we have to kill them, and then the Death Acolyte just raises them, too?
That's a power play, isn't it?
I think we're beyond power play.
Yeah.
That's just power.
Their weapons may be useless against you, but your phantasmal sword cuts them down just as if you were still wielding the genuine article and not a ghostly replica of Night Slayer. In no time at all, the three murderers lie dead at your feet on the moorland road. Only the Death Acolyte remains. You can hear him now quite clearly, muttering under his breath in some dark tongue. Do you want to strike the Acolyte down immediately without hesitation, or will you press him for information as to who it was that wanted you dead? So, we reckon that... Do we reckon that he's not working alone, and there's a higher power who wants us dead? Or are we just going to kick him?
Well, I think the smart thing to do would probably be try to question him. I mean, and we are already dead, so there's not much more dead we can become at the moment.
You'd think that. I'm just going to say, there is death beyond death in this book.
I would say kill him and then try to, like, search bodies. Because if the three guys running with him were stupid enough to not realize that Death Acolyte, you know, might involve some kind of dead thing happening, they might have some kind of information on them. Is that an option?
That's all right. Resisting the pull of the Death Acolyte's spell, you rush at the black-robed spellcaster, shrieking in fury. A shocked expression enters the man's eyes, and he starts to back away from you, but he is not done with his magic yet. Still holding the crystal ball in one hand, he begins another conjuration. Not waiting to see what it is he is attempting to cast now, you join in battle with the Death Acolyte.
Knock the amethyst out of his hand!
Alright, so, he has got a skill of 7, we've got a skill of 9. So we're pretty good for this.
Okay.
I'm going to roll 2 dice.
You're using new dice, right?
Sure.
Because the other ones didn't like you.
Well, let's see what happens. He rolled 8. Adds to a skill of 7, gives him 16. We've got a skill of 9. So I think we're in a pretty good chance to do a murder on him.
You're so screwed.
Rolled 6. Adds to our skill of 9, gives us 17. 17? No.
No, 15.
Oh, I'm really good at maths.
I'm sorry, I'm talking into a face palm right now.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna
you had
go
one
go
job,
dice.
Dice.
I'm gonna...
I hear stomping.
Right!
Welcome back.
We're doing this.
Okay.
Alright, so the necromancer rolled 3.
Oh! Okay. New dice. Did you like take your dice aside and go threaten them?
I got new dice. The old ones are fired.
Oh, there we go.
Hand in your gun and your badge. And for the attack, we rolled 6.
Oh, cool. Well, nothing like consistency.
Alright, so we kill him.
Awesome! him! Search the bodies! Later.
See what we find. As the Death Acolyte starts to succumb to the force of your wrathful vengeance, a look of panic enters his eyes. He abruptly quits his spellcasting and instead hurls the crystal ball at your feet.
Oh.
The amethyst sphere explodes with the force of the black energies bound within it. For a moment, everything goes black, and then the light of the rising moon returns, and the world appears once more around you, limned in its monochrome radiance. But of the Death Acolyte there is no sign. With the murdering magic user gone, you're still no closer to understanding why you were killed. You return to your body and gaze down upon the cooling corpse.
Well, we can't go home now.
Nope. Like, what are we going to do? Like, put our own corpse over our shoulder and walk home? Or maybe we have to, like, get somebody else's horse and put it on the back of there because ours is bolted on account of being useless. This is great.
Honestly, where are the guys? Where are the guys we killed?
Oh.
Let's go rifle.
I think those were just useless dudes. Like, we didn't even have to roll to kill them. They just got...
Oh.
They were just smoked by our vengeful wrath. Anyway, it is a strange feeling to be looking at your own dead body. You know that you'll not be able to rest now until you have solved the mystery of your own murder and exacted your revenge against the one who wanted you out of the way. But where will you go first in your search of answers? You gaze out across the windswept promontory towards the distant Valsinor Castle. This is incredibly high fantasy.
You're ruining the epic theme in my head that was playing.
I know, but also I've never said promontory out loud before in my entire life.
Neither have I. Frankly, I'm glad you did it first, because you sound much better saying it than I would.
Alright, genuinely, one of the reasons why I started this podcast is because I'm from the south of England, and I've been told I've got quite a nice reading voice. So.
You do!
Thank you. Ahead of you, directly to the north, lies the village of Sleeth, the castle a black shadow now against the horizon behind it. To the northwest lies the tangled expanse of Wraithwood, where, rumour has it, a wise woman dwells. Perhaps she could help you in your search for answers. To the northeast, the moors peter out at the edge of the sea, where, when you were here last at least, a hermit monk dwells, down on the seashore. Perhaps he might be able to help you. However, to the east you can see the dark hill of a burial mound, and you feel a strange pull to this place that you cannot explain. Just as you do, in fact, the stone circle of the Nine Maidens where you were attacked. So will we approach the burial mound, succumb to the lore of the Nine Maidens, which are the stone circles, mm-hmm. or explore one of the other options ahead of us as well?
I'd say wise woman, because first, she's not likely to freak out as much when she can see and or talk to us. Second, we'll be getting information in a safe atmosphere, as opposed to trying to press answers out of the thing we just killed, how that would have gone. Yeah, I'd say go seek the wise woman.
Alright, so it's asking, turn to 217 for that then. It says here, roll two dice. If the total roll is less than or equal to your will score, then we have to do something.
Oh. Pull of that mound.
Oh, we rolled 12. So.
We're good.
We are not beating that will score today, unfortunately.
What?
We have to roll underneath it to get something to happen.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, well, sometimes this will just happen, I guess. Unable to resist the curious attraction of the Nine Maidens, you approach the Standing Stones. Feel the ground beneath your feet with every ethereal step you take. Although the heather passes through you as if your body was nothing but smoke, where to your mortal eyes the Nine Maidens look like nothing more than a circle of weathered stones, flecked with moss and lichen, you can now see tendrils of eldritch power rising into the night sky like coruscating trails of multicolored flames.
This just gets better and better.
Yeah, I really wanted to start reading books on tape. Is that obvious? You can hear the plaintive singing of women, although you can see none. You come to a halt at the centre of the stone circle, before a horizontal altar stone, marvelling at the writhing tendrils of ethereal energy. And then, as you stand there, listening to the mournful voices of the invisible women...
I love that, like, the scariest sound they can think of, the creepiest sound, is women that you can hear, but not see.
Hearing women where there are none.
You hear the voice of your mother. Why don't I have any grandchildren yet?
Shut up! I'm only 24. As you stand there, listening to the mournful voices of the invisible women. Weren't they the Stop Coney guys? Sorry, that was terrible.
What?
As you stand there, listen, the mournful voices of the invisible women. Those same tendrils of energy are inexorably drawn towards you. At the same time, you feel yourself imbued with otherworldly strength. The Nine Maidens have chosen a champion and worked both their magic upon you. So, do you know what that means?
It means that strange women lying about in ponds and distributing swords are... No, okay, sorry, wrong.
Sorry. I was going to say, that means we get strong and beefy now. They
well,
increase
that's good.
Our
Can we increase our will?
They increase our skill and stamina. And also increase our will by one as well.
Yay!
So, we've got a skill of 10, a stamina of 18, and a will of 7, which is pretty good.
So that tells you what kind of characters I normally play in RPGs and stuff that I'm like, yay, 1 point of will!
I'd be quite happy to get the point of stamina as well, because I generally play the get kicked in the head a lot character. But like, as long as I'm getting kicked in the head and no one else is, then I think I'm doing my job.
Oh, we should play MMOs sometime.
You know what? We should. I've never actually played an MMO, because I don't think Guild Wars counts. It just, like, came at a weird time in my life, and I was busy playing FPSs.
I only did Guild Wars once. It was a weird time for me, and I just needed some way to connect.
Yeah, I learned it by watching you.
I don't know that I like the strength of these voiceless women, or these bodiless voices of women. Okay.
Well, I mean, they're making us feel tough and strong, so I'll take it at least.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like when I probably should have been playing MMOs, I was busy getting into first-person shooters, and I don't think that really made me any better, so.
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood.
Oh god, it's like, yeah.
I mean, it really is. It was like that in college. You're one of the FPS gamers, or you became one of the RPG and then MMORPG gamers.
Hmm. I think I kind of straddled that line in that. But I usually played a lot of Call of Cthulhu when I was younger as well, which like
that explains a lot of these books.
Yeah, I justified that to myself as well by saying it's like Dungeons and Dragons, but you can get a Tommy gun in it. Anyway,
that voice was fantastic, by the way.
Thank you. It's my impression of myself. Standing just beyond the Nine Maidens, on the crest of the hill, are three stones joined to form a stone archway. Within the portal formed by these monoliths, you can see a spiralling vortex forming. A gateway to another world is opening in front of you. Will you pass between the stones and through this otherworldly portal, wait and see what happens, or try to leave the stone circle?
I still say we try to leave and go talk to somebody who knows what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad plan, honestly.
We've got one more point of will. Where's the dice that didn't like us, that kept rolling low?
Well, that's the thing, they were rolling low when we were trying to roll high, and rolling high and we wanted to roll low.
Just don't tell them what we want.
No, those dice are handing in their badge and their gun. The instant you pass beyond the boundary formed by the stones again, the ethereal light fades and the otherworldly portal closes. Which way do you want to go now? East towards the burial mound, north towards the village and Valsinor Castle, northwest towards Wraithwood, or northeast towards the sea cliffs? I'm pretty sure the wise woman was in Wraithwood. I think that was what happened.
Was it? Are we allowed to flip back and check, or do we have to use like memory?
I think, well, we're meant to use memory, but
books are like written memory.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's literally written down on paper.
Yes. Yes.
I cannot find it.
That is an entirely different problem.
Yes.
Because I remember thinking, well, Wraithwood sounds a little, come my brethren sort of thing. And I didn't think, see, the hermit was on the shore, right?
Mm.
And then the wise woman was...
I'm pretty sure she was in Wraithwood.
Well, we could go to Wraithwood. And I mean, worst comes to worst, we get in another fight.
Or are
dragged to the depths of hell, you know, by eldritch tendrils, but...
This is turning into Bayonetta. I'm okay with that. Alright, let's go to Wraithwood. Before long, you're enveloped within the bounds of Wraithwood. The trees grow thick and dark around you, although you can still make out the glowing orb of the moon. That's a weird way to describe the moon, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, that's usually you see, like, usually not how you don't hear orbs about moons.
No, like, I don't understand the glowing orb to be something like a magical spell, or possibly a ghost, but...
You and I read very different things, I think, because that's not where my brain was going. But, okay.
Oh. You still make out the glowing orb of the moon between the leafless branches above you that look like the clawing talons of skeletal hands. Black thunderheads are starting to mass on the horizon, and the wind is picking up. You believe that the wise woman's hovel lies at its heart, although some say that she is actually a witch.
Oh, good call. But...
Thank you very much. I genuinely haven't read this book before. That was, like, part remembering, part guesswork, but, you know, we're here now. All things considered, if anyone can help you, probably a practitioner of the dark arts can. The blaring note of a hunting horn suddenly breaks the unnatural stillness.
Make a comment really fast about them equating the village witch with being a practitioner of the dark arts?
Yeah.
Okay, comment over. Thank you.
I don't know. All witches practice the dark arts, obviously. That's a bit... It's a bit witchist, I think.
Yeah.
The blurring note of a hunting horn suddenly breaks the unnatural stillness of the wood, and you hear the pounding of hooves on the wind. Following the sound to its source, you look up to see ethereal riders galloping towards you out of the gathering storm clouds. They're literally riders on the storm. They're phantom steeds pounding the air while shimmering spectral hounds sprint in front of them.
And they yell, yippee-ki-yay!
That's spectral hounds, not spectral hands, who is one of the long-time listeners of the show Hello Ian. This wild hunt appears to be heading directly towards you. Will you stand your ground and unsheathe your phantasmal blade, try to hide from the hunt in the undergrowth, or flee from the ethereal huntsman?
Flee!
Yep, okay, running away. Well, I know, like, if we flee, is it going to take us out of the Wraithwood as well?
That would be not cool. I would like to flee to the heart of the Wraithwood. Yeah, ideally.
I'm going to hold my finger on the page and see if it is involving us running away.
Well, we want to run away from the hunt. We don't want to run away from the woods. We just want to run away from the hunt.
Well, it's the thing. It's it says flee from the Ethereal Huntsman, which I think is probably going to lead us out of the Wraithwood.
Oh, that would suck. Well, we can hide. It does not seem like a good idea.
We can hide or we can get our stab on.
Out of the two, I'd say hiding more likely would probably be the dumbest thing and also the one I would tend towards.
Yeah, that's reasonable. All right, so we're going to hide in some bushes.
Yes.
Cool. With the wild hunt bearing down on you out of the sky, you turn and flee deeper into the wood. You throw yourself into cover beneath the growth of bracken, obscuring the root bole of an old oak, just as the hunt's hounds and horses alight in a clearing between the trees. The unearthly barking of the dogs echoes between the black trunks of ash and elder, and you hear someone command the pack to seek them out wherever they might be.
Ooh.
Ooh. As you wait, lurking in the dense undergrowth, you hear the padding footsteps of the hounds getting closer, accompanied by an urgent snuffling sound. And then they find you. Snarling rapidly, the ethereal hunting dogs go for you. Fight the hunt, the phantom hounds all together. Right, so we've got a skill of 10. This one's got a skill of 7. So, it rolled 5. I'm pretty sure that's already lost, but... yep, we beat it.
So yay!
We end up with a skill of 13 against its skill of 10. Second one, got really lucky and rolled 9. Whoops. So it's got a skill of 6, and 15. I'm getting better at maths. And then we rolled 8 and we killed it. The third hound rolled boxcars, so we've got to deal with this phantom hound with a skill of 18.
What?
Oh, I should say boxcars is 2 sixes.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know how familiar people are with craps lingo, but anyway.
I would go with a not at all for me. Learning new things every day, thank you.
Well, you know Snake Eyes at least, don't you? So we rolled 9, and back to our skill of 10 means that we kill it.
Yay!
Okay. If you are still alive, the leader of the wild hunt calls off the dogs. Okay, so okay. I don't think that we were even like meant to kill them to death. I think we're just like meant to not get killed by dogs at that point. Anyway, you suddenly find yourself surrounded by the ghostly members of the wild hunt. You're not going anywhere. Their noble leader points at you with his loaded phantasmal crossbow and declares, I am Baron Blood, Lord of the Wild Hunt, and I demand some sport. Oh my god. Baron Blood. Like... Oh my god. Right. This is like, I'm just...
Is he dressed in, like, these ghostly crimson, you know, coat and boots with a big swooping hat and a large feather?
I'm imagining he's got an Elizabethan ruff as well. While he's saying, ooh. I'm imagining he's also got a huge, great bushy beard and is Brian Blessed. I'm imagining in the live-action adaptation of this, he is played by Brian Blessed.
Baron Blood.
I am Baron Blood, Lord of the Wild Hunt. Sorry for shouting, everybody listening on headphones, but I did the Brian Blessed impression, and what else am I supposed to do? He takes aim and fires, the quarrel of the crossbow zipping through the air and striking a lightning-sundered oak 100 meters away. You see that tree? He cries. You nod. Make it to that tree before my hounds can catch you, and you go free. Fail to make it to that tree in time, and your soul is mine. Do you understand? This is really fun
this
to read out, I'm
seem
sorry.
Very fair.
Not really. Can we outrun
well,
some
what would
dogs?
You expect from Baron Blood?
He's just a huge jerk who loves making us, like, go through hell. You nod again. Hunters. Then go! There's no time to think or plan. All you can do is start running. You set off at a sprint. Ghostly lungs, still gasping for breath, even though you no longer breathe. You run as if your very soul depended on it. Which it does. But how can you possibly outrun Baron Blood? How can you possibly outrun Baron Blood's phantom hounds? Right, so we can rely on cunning and good fortune to get the better of the hounds, or we can rely on brute strength and our own relentless determination. We've got a skill of 10 and a luck of 7. I'll let you know that now.
How far away was the tree again?
It was a 100 meters.
We haven't been too great on the cunning, which is probably more my fault than yours. So let's go with brute strength.
Yeah, I mean, considering that they had big spectral hounds, I think hiding in a bush may not have been the best course of action.
I told you it was the dumbest choice.
I mean, as far as dumb choices go on the show, it's not the worst we've had so far.
That was something I thought about.
Yeah. Oh, we're both remembering the time the guy climbed into the burrow hole of the rockworm. Because
this is a couple times I was thinking about, but yeah.
I think that's still the worst choice we've ever made. Sorry, Chris. You race towards the sundered oak, determined to reach the tree before our snarling dogs catch up with you. So we roll 3 dice here. So we need to get less than or equal to our stamina score.
Okay.
We're good. We rolled 10 and our stamina is 18. So if the total rolled is equal to or less than your stamina, roll 2 dice this time. And we need to beat our will.
Oh.
We rolled 3. So with a will of 7, that means we did it.
Hooray!
All right.
I made a good decision.
Yeah. We did it. We brute forced our way through this one. Because we're strong and tough and have got... We've got good legs for running.
Good phantom legs. That can run through the grass, but not the trees, the bracken, and the ground.
No, we're just...
But we can pass through the heather.
Exactly, yeah. As if we were smoke. I don't quite like that. Yeah, I don't know why ghosts don't just, like, fall through the earth straight to the core.
Well, I like... I can understand, like, keeping, you know, some sort of altitude, you know, whether it's at ground level because of psychological reasons, you know, remembrance, whatever. But kind of the picking and choosing what you can actually go through or not is a little weird.
Oh, I mean, I think ghosts essentially run off suspension of disbelief. Like, they're already perpetual motion machines. They don't need to take any more energy, but they can keep expending it. Like, we murdered those dudes earlier. That just didn't happen by itself.
That's actually kind of a very sad implication there.
Yeah. Anyway, that's why I don't believe in ghosts.
Okay.
Sorry. That's why I don't believe in ghosts, Mum and Dad. Unbelievably, with a hellish hound snapping at your heels, you make it to the tree and fling your arms around the sundered oak. You stare in wonder as the crossbow bolt embedded in the bark crumbles into silver dust. With a shrill, spine-chilling scream, the Baron's spectral form dissolves like mist on the wind. Add 1 to your will. Yeah!
Hooray!
You suddenly find yourself at the centre of a whirling maelstrom as, with whinnying cries, unearthly howls and blood-curdling screams, the rest of the wild hunt is forcibly returned to the realm of the damned once more. We gain 1 luck point.
Never to return until they can come up with a better character name for themselves.
Hey, leave the Baron of Blood out of this.
Well, it wasn't even Baron of Blood, was it? It was just Baron Blood.
Just Baron Blood, yeah, sorry. A lot of things in this were the thing of the thing, or just thing of thing.
No.
So, he threw me by being just the Baron of...
Baron
by
Blood.
Just being Baron Blood,
Baron
yeah.
Blood. This is my death mage, Necro.
Just as the huntsman promised, having bested his wild hunt, you're free to continue your search for answers upon this earthly plane.
Wait, but what if he was part of the plan? Aren't we worried that he was part of the plan?
I think he was just there to, like, have a good time.
But how do we know that?
Well, because he disappeared, basically. I do appreciate how high fantasy this is. I feel like if I read any more, I'm going to, like, just blink and I'm going to be wearing a robe.
Oh, you sort of start, your skin's going to start growing armor here in a second?
Yeah. Then, between the tangle of trees, the wise woman's cottage comes into view. You can see the light of a roaring fire flickering behind the grimy windows of a tumble-down hovel.
If only we could feel heat.
If only we could feel love.
We're getting to very dark places with this, and I'm not talking about eldritch horrors.
See, I'm getting into romance novel places with this, I think. You also notice that a dead magpie has been nailed to the door. Oh.
Well.
Great.
Pie for dinner.
Oh, no. This is very witch with the letter Y instead of an I in it. A very cult. Is it just pronounced cult but with a V instead of a U?
Oh,
I'm not a very cult person, I suppose. I'm born in the south of England. I'm the least black metal person you could ever meet. Some know her as Mother Toadsfoot of Wraithwood and call on her when they are in need of a midwife or a cure for toothache. Others name her witch. Under normal circumstances, you wouldn't have any truck with witches, but these are far from normal circumstances. Still, the thought of having anything to do with the crone, after your family has avoided having anything to do with her for 3 generations, fills you with trepidation.
Well, yeah, so a little trepidation right there, you know, avoiding anything to do with the crone, as your family has avoided her for 3 generations.
Yeah, but they've been 3 generations of people that are alive.
Yeah.
We're a ghost now. I think all bets are off. Right, so we can approach the front door of her hovel.
She's not going to treat us differently just because we're a ghost.
I mean, this probably isn't the first time it's happened to her as well, if we consider. She lives in the Wraithwood, you know?
Yeah, that does tend to suggest...
Wraiths. Like, we just met the Baron.
On the other hand, the three guys with the Death Acolyte couldn't figure that part out. So maybe people in this section of the world are extremely thick.
Maybe. But I think that seeing as we're a knight and these are people that live with us, I think that we shouldn't throw stones whilst we're living in our glass house. Is that what it means?
Wait, are we throwing stones at the witch?
No.
Okay.
That would be a bad idea.
No, I don't mean literally.
Yeah. I feel like
figuratively,
we're maybe
metaphorical stones.
Throwing stones at the people that live around us whilst we're the knight in our castle. Don't want to call too many of them thick, otherwise they might start taking offence. But what are they going to do? They're peasants. Anyway, so George approaches...
So you offend the peasants.
Yeah. George approaches the front door of the witch's hovel, or do you want to spy on her through a smeary window first?
I'll just go to the front door.
Yeah. Knock. It's only polite.
Can we?
Well, the cottage door is suddenly flung open by a scrawny old woman wearing a plain black robe and with a shock of wild white hair streaming out from around her head. Who's that? Who's there? She demands, peering into the night through eyes clouded with cataracts. Come on, speak up! I know you're there. I can smell you. She is totally blind. Like, I'm not going to read that in surfer lingo.
What?
She is totally blind. It's not like a surfer lingo kind of thing there, is it?
Yeah. She's totally blind. Oh my god.
Dude. The expression on her face suddenly becomes one of startled fear, and she raises her bony hands ready to defend herself. You're one of them, ain't you? She snaps. So your master's sent you to do away with me at last, has he? Well, we'll see about that. The old crone weaves her hands through the air in front of her as if preparing to cast a spell. So we can draw our phantasmal swords and defend ourselves, or we can speak up and tell the wise woman we mean her no harm.
I'd go with no harm.
I don't think this is really a choice, is it? Yeah, like, no harm. Why would we want to kill her?
Hey, this woman knows who is coming after us with undead, and we're not going to strike her down now.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, she's probably, again, living in the Wraithwood, she's had to deal with this. She's probably much more experienced in dealing with ghosts than we are.
And if she's been living in the Wraithwood and been having to deal with this, that means she is much more powerful, probably, than we think she is.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that was a dead magpie nailed to the thing. Like, did she catch it first, then kill it? Like, I can't do that. That's real tough, catching a flying bird. Mistress, you say. Wait, I have not come here to harm you. I come only seeking your aid. The crone freezes, her hand still. You want my help? She sniffs the air sharply 3 times. You mean he didn't send you? Nobody sent me. I have come of my own accord, you tell her. But you're a ghost. I can smell it, the witch goes on. And what do you mean you want my help? You hurriedly relate the events of the evening so far to Mother Toadsfoot, hoping against hope that she might be able to help you in some way. When you have finished your story, she looks at you, a grimace on her face, even though you're certain she can't actually see you. You'd best come inside, she says.
Well, she has imagination.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, probably...
A grimace on her face, even though she can't actually see you. Well, you know, even with my eyes closed, if somebody came up and was like, you know, hey, I am a non-corporeal being.
Like, I don't understand why blind people just stop emoting. That doesn't make much sense. You'd best come inside, she says, and you follow her over to the threshold into the cottage. There's certainly something afoot, she says, when you're both standing before the fire. Being blind doesn't appear to hinder her, and certainly not within her own home. There have been signs and portents, see? Bad dreams. They're always a good sign. People have been having a lot of them lately. A right plague of nightmares. There's been a disturbance within the spirit world, too. Something's coming, something bad. You press the old woman as to how she thinks she can help you. Well, she says, scratching at a hairy wart on her hooked chin. Ugh. We've all been there, right, fellas? I might have a charm in my book for bolstering your own powers on the earthly plane, but it'll cost you, mind. You wonder what the old woman means. It is obvious that you do not have the means to pay her for her services. Or I could conjure my familiar spirit to find out who's responsible for your present condition. What would it be? Do we want Mother Toastfoot to try and strengthen our own special spectral powers? Summon her familiar spirit to provide you with answers? Or would we rather leave her hovel and not have any more to do with her, as she's obviously a witch of some power?
Why all this hate against witches?
I don't know.
This is so sad.
I mean, we're ghosts. I do not think we should be pointing fingers.
If we had fingers to point, I would totally agree. Okay, so we definitely need to find what's going on. Are you wanting to get stronger? Because I'm kind of wanting to know. I'm wanting explanations, again, in an obviously safe environment.
I kind of feel like we're already plenty strong. I mean, I want to find out what she's going to say.
Don't taunt the dice.
Well, we may not even have to roll anything at this point, so...
Well, I'm just saying, you're talking about being plenty strong. I'm just saying, don't taunt the dice. We've got... You've got a pair that are working for us now?
Yeah. They're on our side.
I don't want them to think we don't need them.
Yeah, also, we don't really have anything to pay her, so she may ask us to do something...
Well, I mean...
Something that involves physical effort, and I do not know if I can be bothered.
Well, I don't think we have to worry about physical effort, and being, again, the whole non-corporeal being, she probably knows we don't have anything to, like, pay her with. And well, since she lives apart from society, she probably isn't expecting the normal methods of payment anyways. Unless, again, this is a totally different kind of book.
Well, that frightens me. See? I don't know what it could possibly be that she wants, and I don't know if I want to deal with it, so let's ask her for advice. The witch sits down on one side of the table and invites you to take a seat opposite her. She then begins her conjuration, her eyes rolling up into her head as she calls her familiar spirit by name. Come, Pie Wacket, come to Mother. The temperature in the hovel suddenly drops, frost forming on the inside of the windows. As you watch aghast, something manifests in the air between you and the witch.
Her familiar's a Dementor!
Ooh! Well, I hope not, because I think, considering we're just ghosts, we don't have a physical body, I think that... I'm pretty sure Dementors eat those for breakfast, don't they?
I have no idea.
Me neither.
We need to check. Where's the fandom side of Tumblr?
You know what? I think if I go onto the Harry Potter wiki and try and find this out, that's a deep hole, and I don't know if I can pull myself out of it. Anyway, her familiar manifests. It has a body like that of a monkey, only it is covered in the iridescent blue and green plumage of a parrot. It has the backward jointed legs of a cockerel and the face of a demon. It hovers before you, a cruel sneer splitting its ugly visage. This is just like...
What happened to cats?
This is just like a DeviantArt original character, I'm sorry.
What happened to familiars as, like, cats?
Just regular ass animals.
Yeah.
Ah, come on. Pie Wacket, answer me this. Who is responsible for this one's murder? Her familiar spirit writhes as if in pain, mewling like a child.
Oh,
baby. Why do you not answer me? Mother Toadsfoot pushes. Another would command me, Pie Wacket snarls from between gritted teeth. Tell me, the witch shrieks. Answer your mother. The demon utters something... The demon? God. This feels like loaded language, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Not an accurate representation of witchcraft? Can we say that?
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, we've all done stuff in college.
Yeah. Well, it's that kind of joke about people saying, you know, Satanism will teach her, or Satan will teach her children witchcraft. Well, that'd be funny since witches don't actually believe in Satan or demons or, you know, that's kind of a Christian thing, actually.
Yeah. I mean, the Christian deity is generally associated with the Christian faith, kind of.
Yeah.
I'll buy that. Like, they say that they'll make us believe in Satan, but... No, make us worship Satan. But also, Christianity is the guys that are making us believe in it in the first place.
Yeah, basically. But yeah. Anyways, yeah.
This feels like a debate for another time.
Demon familiar, little demon familiar. Out there, even in the realm of talking about witches.
Yeah. The demon utters something intelligible in some netherworld tongue, unable to resist its mistress any longer. Do not try to trick me, demon, the witch roars at her familiar. Ask me no more, the imp squeals, its unnatural form contorted in pain, its face a picture of agony. The Lord of Shadows comes. Fuck.
I'm sorry, I feel like we're reading something Cotton Mather wrote. You know, this is like serious, like, Spanish Inquisition shit.
It might be, yeah. God, like, is this just, this entire book is just an exercise in making me, like, not trust any witches that I may encounter in my day-to-day life. This book is anti-witch propaganda. I'm onto you, Jonathan Green.
It's translation of the Malleus Maleficarum.
Right. Before your very eyes, the demon's feathers darken to the colour of blood, and its skin blackens.
Like a bruise.
Command me...
Like a bruise.
Just like a bruise, yeah. Command me no more, it growls in a much deeper voice, suddenly lashing out at the witch with claws as sharp as blades. Giving a weak cry of pain herself, the old woman slumps face first onto the table, blood pouring from a savage wound in her neck. Oh, God.
Well, that was bad.
A familiar spirit then turns to you and snarls. Now you shall die a second death. Hastily unsheathing your phantasmal blade, you prepare to defend yourself against the familiar's demonic talons. So, right, this thing which is a body of a monkey, covered in feathers, with weird legs like a cockerel and the face of a demon. I reckon we can take it.
Yeah.
It's got a skill of 7.
It's
We've got
little.
A skill of...
It's in pain already.
We just pick it up by the scruff of its neck.
It's a mercy killing.
basically. All right, so it's got a skill of 7. I just rolled 5, which gives it a skill of 12. We cannot lose. I rolled a 3, so we tried our best to lose, but we got a skill of 13, which means it's dead now. All right, we defeat the unbound demon. What happens now?
Well, I'm assuming the witch is very dead already.
She's dead as hell.
Crap.
She's dead as disco.
Exactly how dead is hell?
I have to go there to find out.
Oh, let's lay that for another time, because that would be a very long podcast.
You flee from Mother Toadfoot's cottage as fast as you can, and don't once look back, because we're responsible for a murder, I guess?
I was just thinking that. I was like, well, we could go see if the hermit had anything to add, but I would really hate to be responsible for yet another innocent death.
Mm. You're soon deep in the night-shrouded woods again. Eerie cries echo between the night-black trees. An owl hoots, and you hear the croaking of toads coming from a reedy pool somewhere nearby. And then, at last, the forest starts to thin, and you emerge on the other side of Wraithwood. Trees give way to tumbled headstones, and you find yourself passing between the overgrown graves of a cemetery.
Thinking, wow, I wish I could just sleep here.
I just want to go have a nap underneath the gravestone. Aw, mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be lovely. Ahead of you lies the village of Sleeth, but before you can reach it, or the castle beyond, you must first cross the neglected graveyard. Nobody's looking after it. It's horrible. Such a shame.
Well, it's because none of their bodies are actually there. Apparently, this is a normal thing for the dead to be walking about, so who's concerned with the graveyard?
That's a good point, actually. You'd expect that at least, look after it, because do you reckon that the dead go back to their graves to sleep?
Well, no. Oh, fun fact. At least here in the eastern side of the U.S., we do have a very, very large amount of very, very old graveyards. Probably not as old as, you have in the U.K., but still... they actually would ring the graveyards around here with iron around the top, because iron is supposed to stop spirits. So it would keep, it's not to keep grave robbers and stuff out. That's why they're very ineffective fences, but it's always iron, even on top of a brick or stone wall, to keep the spirits in, to keep them from getting out of the graveyard and wandering about.
Oh, okay. I thought, when you first said it, I thought you meant it was directly on top of the gravestone itself, but that's...
No, around it. No, iron has always been considered bane of the fey and, bane of spirits, and even bleeding into things like D&D, where, a lot of spellcasters can't use certain metals unless, druids can use copper. That happens a lot, which is a legitimate thing. There's talk about druids in history using copper tools.
Right. I just realised that I don't think we could play an MMO or an RPG together, because I'd feel hopelessly out of my depth.
No, because I start roleplaying and I'm like, ooh, butterflies.
But fair enough. You play druids then, I assume.
No, actually, not a lot. I tend to play very plain characters, like humans, just very dull. I like a good game where I can, control the economy as a butcher or something.
Alright. See, I like games where I can go crazy and drive a New York cab into a screaming house full of ghosts. But that's what I like to play.
And that is why diversity in games is wonderful. That seriously is one thing, because, I work on Shards Online, and that's one thing I really enjoy about working on that game, is because it gives people the opportunity to do what they want in there.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
You can play someone boring, or you can script in. The entire game system is, all the game systems are built in Lua, so you can rewrite if you want and put a car in there and crash
into
the grave.
That's pretty
cool,
actually. Yeah. That sounds alright, actually. I'll put a link to Shards Online in the show notes underneath this.
That'd be awesome. ShardsOnline.com.
I was just going to mention that, this thing about the gravestone reminded me of a Junji Ito comic about... I think it was Junji Ito, at least.
Is he the guy that did the fault?
Amigara fault, yeah.
Yes. Dur.
Really, really good dude. I like his comics a lot. Yeah, he wrote a comic about somebody who moves into a flat opposite a gravestone. Opposite a graveyard, sorry. And his next-door neighbour is a bodybuilder who gets off on posing for ghosts. So what the guy does at night is he goes out into the graveyard and turns all the gravestones so that they're facing his flat. It's really good. That's something else I kind of want to put in the show notes as well, just because it is a real treat to read. I enjoy it a lot. Anyway.
Creepy as hell.
We're getting distracted. Let's go to the graveyard.
Yes, the neglected graveyard.
It looks like it's been neglected for some time. Headstones lie tumbled amidst briars and thick tussocks of grass, while a number of freestanding tombs look like they have been broken into, or perhaps the bodies interred within have broken out. You're halfway across the cemetery when the first of the ghosts
appears. Their iron.
Yeah. It is that of a young woman, her face emaciated. The ghost rises from the turfed mound of a grave. Help us, stranger, the young woman pleads.
Spiritually starved, or did she die of literal starvation?
I don't know. It just says that the ghost is emaciated, so maybe, like... Maybe she was buried alive.
Ooh, that would also be awful.
Yeah, don't...
I say as if walking through and talking to ghosts is normal. Wow, that would be really awful to see an emaciated ghost.
Public safety announcement. Don't get buried alive, guys. It seems funny, but... Oh, no. Another figure steps out of a crumbling mausoleum. This time it is the spectre of a severe-looking old man dressed in the clothes of a notary. Yes, help us, he begs, for we are slaves to a foul fiend that will not let us depart this world.
And he makes me fill out so much paperwork.
Oh, no. Just bound to his administration stuff.
Yep.
It's dreadful. Free us, says the ghost of a bearded woodsman who sits up through the turf of an unmarked grave, that we might go to our eternal rest. What is it that has bound these ghosts to this place, and that fills them now with such dread, having made their afterlives a misery? Will you help them? Can you help them? So we can try, or we can not.
Well, let's try to at least poke about a bit.
Yeah, it certainly seems fair. Like,
yeah.
They're asking nicely.
And they are kind of on our team right now.
Yeah, like, they haven't tried to stab us or turn
into
giant demons.
Which is definitely, like, way above anybody else we've met today. And, you know, it might be good to have some undeadish friends.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, seeing as we're probably going to be undead for the majority of this book.
Yes.
Start making friends before we start making enemies.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, stranger, thank you, the ghost of the young woman says in obvious relief. But tell me, what manner of creature is it that has you in its thrall? You ask the restless Zed of the graveyard. The notary looks like he is about to answer, when a tremor passes through the graves at your feet. What was that? It comes, the young woman gasps, a terrified look in her eyes. Abruptly, all of the ghosts vanish, as if they have been sucked back into the ground.
See, by helping, I didn't think that meant fighting. I thought we would, like, do some therapy and listen for
just sit
a
down
while.
And talk about their problems, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, poor ghosts. The tremor comes again as the ground in which the dead of Sleeth lie rises up before you as a colossal mound of mouldering earth, studded with splintered coffin lids and the remains of those buried within. This is cool as hell. Sorry, I just think this is a really good look. Like this, describe it some more. This mound of grave dirt shudders once more and takes a lumbering step towards you as arms and legs take shape from within the crumbling conglomeration that now stands before you.
Hail it?
I think it already knows we're here, I'll be honest. The looming humanoid figure exudes a palpable aura of death as it stalks towards you with bone-crunching steps, lumpen arms outstretched, while ghost voices cry from somewhere within it. Help us! Free us! Save us! You have no choice but to draw your ghostly sword once more and engage the grave golem in battle. Like, I don't know, I just think that's really cool. This giant, earthy
golem.
Monster. Yeah, with gravestones poking out of its back and coffins every now and then as well. It's a really good look, and I like it a lot, is what I'm saying. But we're going to fight it with swords now. So it's got a skill of 8. It rolled 6, which gives it a skill of 14 overall. We've got a skill of 10. And we rolled 6, which means that we beat it.
Yay!
Yeah! Okay. We destroyed the grave dirt monster, which is good. With a bellow of frustrated rage, you bring your scintillating ethereal blade down upon the monster, and the necromantic spell animating it is savagely broken. The golem's body bursts open, showering you with grave dirt, human remains, and rotting coffin wood.
Yeah.
This is so gross.
And then we go take a ghost shower.
Take a ghost shower in ectoplasm. At the same time, the souls of those bound to it fly free. As they ascend into the night sky, they call their thanks and praises to you for freeing them from their undying nightmare.
And your good...
A good deed does not go unrewarded. As they depart from the earthly plane for good, the ghosts share a portion of their power with you.
And there we go. The best reason to do a good deed, when you get paid for it.
You add 1 to your will score and 1 to your luck. This is actually going really well.
Yeah.
Apparently, Jonathan Green's got a reputation for writing books that are just savage and will, like, pull the rug out from underneath you and kill you, but we're going well so far, but maybe I'm just going
to
complain.
I was thinking, we're actually, compared to the other podcasts I've listened to, we're actually doing pretty well, dumb decisions notwithstanding.
Well, we made the best of a bad situation in that case, I think. The ghosts of Sleeth freed. You too are free to continue with your quest. Passing beyond the boundary wall of the cemetery at last, you find yourself on the road leading into the village.
Huzzah!
Yeah! Yeah! Night lies over the sleeping village like a bejeweled cape. It's getting a bit wanky. Night lies over the sleeping village like a bejeweled cape, the wind chasing black clouds across the sky like a wolf after a shepherd's flock. Ahead of you lie the stone-built buildings and thatched cottages of Sleeth.
Is that a chair creaking or is that a cat?
That's a cat. Hang on a second.
Hi, kitty!
I'm going to let her into the room. Is she going to say anything for the camera? For the microphone? For the lovely people listening at home? No, she's staying silent and hiding underneath my chair.
Aww.
Thanks. Anyway. Ahead of you lie the stone-built buildings and thatched cottages of Sleeth. There are a few lights visible in the windows of the village, although you see plenty within the windows of Castle Valsinor. Most of the villagers, who predominantly work on the land, have already retired for the night. The tolling of the temple bell rings through the cold night air, the sound deadened by the capricious whipping wind. And then the soughing of the wind becomes what can only be a moaning voice. The voice is joined by others, all wailing in torment, and they are getting closer. You can see a phosphorescent mist moving towards you like a sentient cloud over the fields that lie between you and the village. This is no natural mist. As you watch, anguished
faces
there...
Because everything else in our story has been so natural thus far.
Well, and all I want is just, like, to come home and be like, you know what, that sunset doesn't look like the sky is being bruised. It just looks like the sun's going down. I'm not going to refer to the moon as an orb. It just looks like the moon hanging in the air. But no! Apparently they're not going to let us have that today. This is no natural mist. As you watch, anguished faces, their eyes closed, surface from within it. The troubled dreams of the villagers have manifested as this nightmarish monster of the spirit world. There is nothing you can do as the unearthly fog slithers towards you over the wind-ruffled grass. And then it is all around you, enveloping you, smothering you, threatening to overwhelm you with its insanity as the nightmares of the populace of Sleeth become manifest reality to your own tortured mind. So, we need to roll 2 die and see if it is great, is less than or equal to our will.
Crossing my fingers.
We rolled 5. Our will is 9.
Cool.
I'm pretty sure that's good.
Yeah.
Tendrils form within the fog, reaching for you, trying to force you to join the macabre dance of the Phantasmagoria.
That's just a fun word to say.
I need to have a glass of water after that. Hang on a second. Sorry, that was a sentence that made me need to have a drink after. You slice at them with your shimmering blade as you start to fight back against the dream monster and its hallucinatory nightmares. So we got to fight it with swords again. We're doing
well,
that
it's not
a
real sword.
No, not really. But let's find, see what happens. Okay, so it rolled 6. It's got a skill of 8. We've got a skill of 10. We rolled 6 again, so I think we managed to beat it.
Yay!
Yeah. So reduce the Phantasmagoria stamina to 0. What happens now?
Well, now we loot it.
Well... You've broken the dark enchantment holding the dream monster together and freed the people of Sleeth from their tortured dreams. With a lingering scream, like that of a child waking from a horrid dream, the Phantasmagoria breaks apart and dissolves like mist on the wind. At the same time, you feel your ghostly form absorb part of its unreal essence. So you get to regain some stamina there, but we're already at maximum, so I think we're fine.
Cool.
Alone again on the road, you decide where to go next in your search for answers. We can either go into Sleeth, or we can skirt past the village and make for Valsador Castle instead. I feel like...
I think we've saved the people in the village enough. Let's go to the castle, because, yeah.
Okay.
Like, we'll do good there. More lasting good.
Yeah. And then you come before the main gate of Valsinor Castle. This was the place where you and your sister played as children, and which became your responsibility upon the death of your father, at 70 years old, and who had himself been widowed many winters before. How old are we?
That's a good question.
How old's our dad when he died? Oh, obviously, how old's our
dad? I was saying he was 70 when...
Yeah. Sorry.
I just told you.
Oh, no, I'm getting tired.
Well, but at war for 3 years, so at least, like, 16 or 17 years old 3 years ago.
But then, how old was our dad when we were born, I think, is the big question.
Nah.
Yeah. Anyway.
We have nothing to go on here.
So. No, this is just like... this is an entire mystery. I mean, if our dad was 50 when he died...
I thought they said it was 70.
50 when... I keep doing this. If our dad was 70 when he died, 50 when we were born, we're 20. I don't really know how old he was when we were born, but I'll have to...
He was younger than 70.
Yeah, basically.
Maybe. It didn't say we were. Did it say we were there when he died? I mean, he could have been 71. We just what come back
from
71?
The war, and they go, "Hey, check it out! You've got a castle now, and your dad's dead. Sorry."
And a dog.
And I think we always had the dog.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, maybe and no, a sister, our dog which now, we not, yeah, not
kind of dog. Always had the sister too.
We've had the sister for nearly all our life.
As far as we know. Oh, yeah, it was a little sister, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah. Your ancestral home appears anything but welcoming to you now. Its high crenulations loom over you, while its torchlit windows seem to stare down with malignant intent.
Malignant intent, no... like a metaphor in the mind of a writer. I mean, seriously, these are a lot of analogies swinging around.
They're just, like, throwing them around like sweets. There is an oppressive atmosphere hanging over the place. I could not tell.
There was oppressive atmosphere, like, before we got here, okay?
There was an oppressive atmosphere hanging over
Maybe
the book.
Problem is us and not them.
Yeah. You've seen neither hide nor hair of the Death Acolyte since your encounter with him, and his murdering band on the Moor Turnpike.
Kill him, though?
We didn't kill him. He threw his shitty orb at the ground and disappeared.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But we killed his friends.
Okay.
You can't shake the feeling that the truth you're searching for will be found within your castle home, but how do you plan on gaining access? Two guards, armed with halberds, are on sentry duty before the main gate. However, you do know of another way in. Along the eastern wall of the outer ward of the castle is a culvert, a drain that lets filth and wastewater out under the wall and down over a cliff edge into the sea. The prospect of crawling up a sewer, even if you are a ghost, does not fill you with glee. And staring up at the looming walls, you wonder what it would be like to soar over them in your spectral form.
What?
We can fly.
Well, I mean, honestly, I'm kind of wondering again why we don't just, you know, A, go through the wall, or B, go approach the guards who will either go, oh my god, the ghost of my former master, or, you know, run screaming. I doubt they're going to fight us either way. There's a lot of options here that don't involve sewage.
Yeah. That's true of most things in life.
So you would think. So there you go, folks. If your only option involves sewage, you're doing it wrong. There are always better options.
Yes, basically.
It's not just that you can't do it, thinking, you just don't want to do it.
Think outside of the box, essentially. Right, so we can either fly over the battlements, go to the main gate and talk to the guards, or do the sewage thing.
Let's fly.
Let's fly. Let's soar like a ghost.
Soar like a bruised eagle.
Yeah. Gazing up at the peg-toothed silhouette of the battlements high above you, you picture yourself breaking free of the pull of gravity and letting the rising wind carry you over them. Right, so we have to roll two dice.
Okay.
And see if it's equal to or less than our will.
Okay.
We rolled 8.
Ooh,
which is good.
Barely.
Yeah. So, we write the number 94 quickly. I think something impressive is going to happen.
Mm-mm.
So it says here, if you are lucky, write the number 94... Yeah. Okay, we test our luck as well. Testing our will. But we're lucky about that as well. So, write the number 94 in your adventure sheet and turn to 293. What does it say on 293? Released from the shackles of a mortal body, you are no longer bound to the ground, but are able to fly high above it. Record the spirit special ability on your adventure sheet and turn to the paragraph.
We learned a new ability!
That's when you just instructed to write down. Yeah, like this does feel proper RPG. Like,
yeah.
Kind of like the Fallout thing of like gaining new perks as you go through.
It would be nice if we had realized this a while back when we were hoofing it around.
Yeah, like when Baron Blood was all like, oh, "We're gonna stab you with swords and make you run for our museum." It would just been nice to go, actually, I'm gonna fly. I'm gonna leave.
Up yours, Baron Blood.
Yeah, precisely. You are rising high into the sky, soaring over the battlements, and enjoying a spectacular bird's eye view of the castle below. You have never seen Valsinor in this way before. Directly below you lies the outer ward, containing stables, kennels, the blacksmith's forge, and the guard's barracks. Beyond a second gatehouse lies the more densely defended inner ward, containing the kitchens, feast hall, chapel, and graveyard, beneath which lie the castle's ancient and extensive catacombs. Over the sea moat, rising from a spur of black rock, is the castle's indomitable keep. You notice that although you can see lights flickering elsewhere in the castle, the keep is in total darkness. Not something you would have expected to see at all, and a sight that fills you with dread. Now that you are airborne, do you want to continue flying over the castle towards the keep to investigate further? Or would you prefer to come back down to Earth and alight in the outer ward below?
Well, is that going to do us any good if, you know, the blacksmith, the guards, who may or may not freak out and try to kill us?
I'm hoping that there are some people that, like, have seen this before, or, like, aren't going to... I would expect that we'd hire staff that know how to deal with ghosts, at least, you know?
Well, you know, if we were apparently close enough to the Chamberlain that we were looking forward to visiting him, probably should head to inner wallish sort of area. You know, kitchen stuff. Like you said, house staff, not necessarily guards.
Yeah. Well, the only options we've got here are outer wards or straight into the keep, I think. So.
Oh, well, let's go straight into the keep.
Yeah. All right. Cool. As you soar over the castle, you become aware of a dreadful, keening cry. Through the wind-whipped night straight ahead, you see a host of phantasmal forms. Some are little more than skull-like faces trailing misty tails behind them, like ethereal comets.
See, and we thought we wouldn't be welcome home.
Well, I think we're making new friends. I don't recognize any of these guys from the staff, although I think one of them might work in the stables. You had never realized Valsinor had so many ghosts. That's a really good sentence. I'm sorry. I never realized this place had so many ghosts. Man.
My eyes are open now.
This is an enlightening experience for me. The wraith-like creatures sense your presence, and their seagull cries intensify as they surge towards you in the wind. Fight the ethereals as if they're one creature. So they've got a stamina of... And they've got a skill of 8. And we've got a skill of 10. So,
why don't we get friendly ghosts? Why does nobody ever get friendly ghosts?
We had those guys in the graveyards that we helped out. Also, we one-shot these guys.
Oh, cool.
If you reduce their combined stamina to 0... It means you've... If you reduce their combined stamina to 0, it means that you've repelled their attack and they break away from you to circle the keep, their eerie howls echoing from the sea-lashed cliffs below. So we can still approach the keep, or we can set them down in the outer ward.
Does this just, like, really want us to go to the outer walls there?
Well, this is the thing, like, if we go down by the keep, there's still gonna be ghosts that we have to deal with. Also, don't tell them I said this, but this book's kind of got a problem with railroading.
Yeah, I'm kind of noticing this. So I guess we'll go to the outer walls just to avoid, you know, our will being overridden or something.
Just to avoid the GM being like, and the rocks fall, all the ghosts die. You're inside the castle at last, within the courtyard of the large outer ward, to be precise. Overhead, the moon hangs like a silvery orb, there it is again, amidst the backdrop of a myriad stars, limning the castle and... Limning? Limning?
Illuminating?
Just, no, what? L-I-M-N-I-N-G.
What?
Limning.
Spell that again?
L-I-M-N-I-N-G.
Limning?
Limning. Huh. Well, I'm going to pronounce it like damning, but with an I instead. Limning the castle in its monochrome light. You take a moment to reacquaint yourself with your castle home, having been away for so long. It appears to be as you remember it, but you can sense a sinister atmosphere hanging over it like a funerary shroud.
Also, that part that you were dead.
Yes, that's new. Flitting through the air above the castle is a multitude of incandescent ethereal forms, spiralling and moaning on the chill wind coming in off the Diamond Sea. In the southeastern courtyard of the corner of the courtyard is the familiar thatched roof structure of the smithy, where you had quite happily whiled away hours at a time in your youth, watching the blacksmith at work, forging weapons, repairing armour and shoeing horses. Opposite the smithy, against the western wall of the outer ward, are the castle stables, and a little further on, abutting the northern wall that divides the outer ward from the inner, is the sturdy stone blockhouse that is the guard barracks. Guarding the entrance to the inner ward, the barbican is an imposing three-story tower, more like a small keep than merely a gatehouse. Next to the barbican, steps lead up to battlements, while below them, against the east wall, are the kennels, where the lords of Valsinor have kept their hunting hounds ever since your ancestors had the fortress constructed centuries ago. You still have no real idea about who ordered that you be killed, or where the Death Acolyte fled to, but you have an overwhelming feeling that inside the castle is where you'll find the answers you so desperately desperately seek. Sorry. So, where would you like to visit first? Smithy, stables, guard barracks, battlements, or kennels? Or, you can rather not delay here, leave the outer ward and make for the inner ward, approaching the barbican that separates the two parts of the castle.
Yeah, let's head towards the inner ward.
Just cannot deal with all this. This is not important to us right now.
Yeah.
We're not going to go to the blacksmith and reminisce.
Or the kennels and see if the old hound remembers us, or, you know.
Actually, hang on a second. Do you have any of the code words bell, barking, barracks, battlements, or blacksmith recorded in your adventure sheet? If so, make a careful note of how many, or turn to 366.
What?
That's weird. Alright, so I guess we just, because we did an adventure, we went straight through it, we get a different choice here. Alright. If you're going to gain access to the inner ward of Valsinor Castle, you're going to have to go past the barbican. As you approach the tower, two dark figures melt from out of the mooncast shadows and materialise before its imposing gates, blocking your way. They wear long black cloaks over plate mail armour of archaic and slightly sinister design, and are an intimidating presence. However, having grown up in the castle and having explored practically every one of its hidey holes and secret passageways, you also know of a tunnel that passes under the wall and into the inner ward beyond. Unfortunately, it starts in a guard privy under the battlements in the east wall. If you want to approach the gatehouse and its sinister guardians directly, we can, or we can make use of the secret tunnel. Alternatively, if you have the spirit's special ability and prefer to fly over the gatehouse and into the inner ward beyond, and we can do that as well.
Yeah, let's use our special ability and just float on up and over.
Yeah.
Which I would like to point out was my first choice.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
What'd you do?
Sorry. That was my idiot cat knocked my guitar over.
Everything okay?
It looks fine.
Okay. Is the cat okay?
And then she just bolted out of the room because there was a loud crashing noise.
Scared me.
Yeah, sorry.
I was like, God, it wasn't that big a deal.
It was quite an ominous dong, though, wasn't it?
An ominous dong.
Ominous dong was my nickname. Ominous dong was my nickname in high school. So you find yourself within the inner ward of Castle Valsinor. To your left, against the western wall, stands the castle cookhouse, which abuts onto the grand structure of the Lord's Feast Hall, where many a mighty banquet was held in your father's time. At the far end of the impressive courtyard, you can see the gatehouse that stands before the sea moat, beyond which lies a bridge that leads to the Black Stone Keep. You fancy you can see something fiery flickering in the darkness there, like sparks rising from a furnace. But before you even get as far as the gate, you can see that a wooden scaffold has been constructed at the centre of the courtyard. The northeastern quarter of the inner ward is taken up by the castle chapel and the private plot of the family graveyard used in more recent times. Beneath the chapel lie the extensive tunnels of the castle catacombs, constructed during the first age of the castle centuries ago by our distant ancestors. You yourself have not explored their labyrinth tunnels. Oh, not just labyrinth tunnels, labyrinthine tunnels. Okay. Nurses' tales of giant rats and worms lurking down in the dark kept you from ever going there as a child. Castle legend has it that there is another way into the extensive tomb tunnels via a passageway at the bottom of the castle well, the stone-clad wellhead of which lies to your right, in the southeastern corner of the courtyard. The last remaining feature worthy of note is the ruined east wall tower. Known as the Blaster Tower, its upper levels were destroyed long ago by a bolt of lightning that sent the top two stories tumbling into the Diamond Sea far below. You just need to decide where to explore first. Will it be the castle kitchens, the feast hall, the chapel, the Blaster Tower, the well? Or, if you'd rather not delay here at all, you can approach the last gatehouse that guards the entrance to the sea moat. Or we can take to the air and try approaching the keep directly.
Well, the Blasted Tower seems kind of out of place with everything.
Yeah.
You know, maybe since we've noticed ghosts for the first time, you know, since becoming a ghost, we should go see if there's something weird about that tower that we never noticed as a human being.
Yeah, the Blasted Tower just seems inherently spooky as well,
yeah.
I think. Entering the Blasted Tower through the open arched entrance at its base, you start to climb the spiralling stair beyond. Higher and higher you climb, until the stairs abruptly run out as you reach what is left of its shattered summit. The cold sea wind buffets your insubstantial body and winds through fissures in the brickwork. It would seem that there is nothing for you here. And then another sound can be heard over the keening of the wind and the crash of breakers on the rocks far below. Someone is calling your name, and as you watch a sphere of ethereal light forms in the orb above you. Now that's what I call an orb. That's exactly what I think of when I think of an orb, by the way. If you want to wait and see what it is, we can, or you can flee before whatever it is has time to fully form upon this plane, running back down the tower to the comparative safety of the courtyard below.
Let's see what's forming.
Yeah, like,
we've lived through, like, an inordinate amount of very stupid decisions, so let's just stand here.
Yeah, I'm an orb fan, you know? Plain and simple.
Real orbs.
Yes.
Not silvery moon orbs.
No, accept no imitations. Unable to take your eyes off the manifesting form, you watch as the ghostly luminescence assumes the shape of an older man, wearing the armour of a warrior knight. You recognise it as your late father's armour, but then the ghost is that of your father. My child, the ghost forms portentously. It grieves me to see you in the same state as I, but although my time is run, things are not too late for you. I come to warn you, trust not the trusted, heed not the helpful, and gird yourself against the night, for the Lord of Shadows waits at the gate and death comes in his wake. Bewildered by your father's ghostly warning, you do not know what to make of his words, as his ethereal form begins to break up on the wind and is carried away in the gusting wind.
But you wish he'd learned to be much more pragmatic and to stop with all that poetry drivel.
Yes. Like, enough with the high fantasy, please. The last thing you hear before he is gone again for good are the words, "Seek the sword under hallowed ground and the shield beyond the door," and then there is nothing.
Well, I guess that means we're going to the well.
Maybe. Seeing your father again spurs you on to see your betrayers brought to justice and your own death avenged. So you get another one to our will and one to our luck. We are.
Cool.
Doing pretty good for our stats, actually. I wasn't too sure about it at the start, but we're doing mighty fine.
Well, we're one-shotting everything.
Yes. That,
besides the first will roll, we haven't failed anything, have we?
No, I don't believe so. But also, they are giving us more will as we go through the story as well, which will get knocked off at some point, I'd expect. But for now, it's doing fine. Anyway, back in the courtyard of the inner ward, remembering to choose somewhere you haven't been already, where would you like to explore next? The kitchens, the feast hall, the chapel, or the well?
Let's go to the well.
Well, I mean, they said hallowed ground, didn't they?
Did they say hallowed ground, or... Oh, I thought it said to go below ground.
Seek the sword under hallowed ground.
Under hallowed ground, oh.
Mm.
Well, the well is the back way into the catacombs, I thought. We can go to the chapel.
I mean, we might be able to go to both. If not,
first
really
one,
sorry.
Then the other.
Yeah. The chapel, with the priest's meager dwelling attached, is a seemingly innocuous building that stands within the bounds of a walled cemetery, complete with hummocks of earth and undulating turf that has been used in recent decades for the burial of family members. Flickering candlelight fills the leaded panes of the stained glass windows, pouring out across a small plot of the graveyard and onto the cobbles of the courtyard beyond. It would appear that someone is inside. We can enter the chapel, explore the graveyard behind it, or leave this consecrated ground and explore elsewhere.
Yeah, let's go in the chapel.
Yeah.
In for a penny, in for a pound.
What's the worst that can happen? We're not a vampire, which means we're allowed to walk onto...
like, worst that could happen is we hit some sort of invisible wall at the door of the chapel and can't go in.
Yeah. The door to the chapel is closed, but not locked. So we've walked into a visible wall, I suppose.
Okay. Well, we can deal with visible walls.
Yeah. If you have the poltergeist special ability or the apparition special ability, you should be able to gain access. If you have neither of these abilities, roll 2 dice. So.
Wait, so we might actually get turned away at the door?
Yeah. Right, so we need to beat our will in this case. We rolled 10, is good. It's good enough.
Oh, wait.
Good enough.
I thought...
We need to get equal to or less than.
Okay. Oh, and we got more will after the father visit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Which was
We've been
fortunate.
Hamleted.
Yeah. Okay. Turn to page 90 quickly. You are able to pass through solid objects, such as walls and doors, as if they weren't there at all. Record the apparition special ability on your adventure sheet. That's pretty good.
Pretty sure I have a sound for this on my phone.
Okay. I can wait.
Okay. No, hold on. Gotta give me a second.
You know what? Yeah. I feel like we just leveled up. We're just like getting all the cool perks and getting all the big stats, and basically we're going to be unstoppable by the end of this.
Yeah.
As you cross the threshold and enter the chapel, your ethereal form is burned by the holy wards protecting this place from the undead. Fuck!
Whoops!
I spoke too soon! Ahead of you, at the other end of the sanctuary, beneath a cast iron candelabrum festooned with the wax of 100 melted candles... Whoa! Alright. Two figures stand before a trestle bier bearing, you can't quite see what. One of the figures is Father Umberto, Valsinor's confessor. He is decked out in the robes of a priest of Telak. The other is a young woman, wearing a flowing woolen dress. It is your sister, Lady Oriana. If you want to reveal yourself now to the priest and your sister, we can. Or you can prefer to hide ourselves away in a shadowy corner and observe what they are doing for a moment first.
Wait, are we not still burning? Was it like a temporary burn crossing the threshold?
Yeah, I think it's just a bit like... Oh, ow! It's not like putting your hand on electric
Did we
fence.
Lose any stamina points?
We lost 4 points of stamina.
Oh. Okay. As long as it's not still
fine.
Burning us.
No. It's like getting a static shock instead of holding the electric fence.
Yeah, let's hold off and see what they're doing a second.
It's a good plan. I don't think we should be gung-ho when it comes to our sister.
Yeah, yeah. You know, fewer dead people in this room would be nice.
Father Umberto finishes intoning prayers over what you can see. You can now see as a body laid out on the bier, and then, having given Oriana his final blessing, departs the sanctuary, leaving her alone with the corpse.
Oh,
your
God.
Your own dead body.
I saw that coming.
Yeah. Seeing your own corpse like this without realising it was even here shocks you to the core. So we add the rest in peace thing to our character sheet. Don't know what that will do.
Okay.
Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. And we lose 1 point of will. Because we're spooked.
Oh. I see what you did there.
You cannot help yourself as you give a cry of shock. Oriana spins round, a look of abject horror on her face. No! No, it can't be! She cries and immediately reaches for the silver crucifix that hangs about her neck. Get back! Get back! She screams. We can either leave our sister in peace and leave the way we came. We can either leave the way we came through the front door, down a flight of stone steps to the rest of the sanctuary, or we can try and talk to her and calm her down.
You see, on one hand, I would like to calm her down, but I don't think that would go well. On the other hand, I don't want to reinforce her belief that she can run us off with a crucifix.
Yeah, I feel like we should have more faith in our own sister.
Yeah. Okay, let's try to talk to her.
Yeah. It's me, you tell Oriana. It's alright, it's me. You're safe. I mean you no harm. How could I? You're my sister. It takes no little persuasion, but gradually you're able to calm your sister down. But as the shock of seeing you again passes, so the tears come. Crying your name, she tries to hold you in her arms, but her desperately clutching hands simply pass straight through your ethereal essence, as if you were nothing more than mist. Oh, no. Oh, jeez. Her tears spent, she pulls herself together enough to ask, "What are you doing here? How can this be?" You patiently explain to her how you've risen from the dead to seek justice for yourself, while also sharing with her all that you have learnt of what is going on in Valsinor Castle.
I don't think we've learned anything.
Well, we know there's lots of ghosts that we didn't know that were there before, yeah. And we did talk to their dad, which would seem like something important to tell our sister.
Yeah, yeah, that's two things we know. But I don't think we should really tell her that the place is chock full of ghosts. I don't know if she'd appreciate that.
There are more things in heaven and hell than are dreamt of. No, wait.
There are more things in heaven and hell. Also, these things are really spooky as well. Some of them have got swords. Some of them are just like floating skulls. It's really
there
cool.
Was this grave earth golem.
Oh, man. I bet Oriana would love the earth golem.
She might. She might, you know.
It's exciting. Your body was brought back to the castle after dark, she explains, the tears threatening to come again. Father Umberto demanded that you be laid here, that he might bless your body, that you might remain undisturbed in the ground, and not suffer the curse of the undead that haunts in this place now. In fact, Father Umberto was very keen to make sure he got you into the ground this very night. He fears that a great evil has taken root here, and that the doom of Valsinor Castle will come this night. He has gone to prepare for the final battle right now. You tell Oriana that you two have seen signs that whatever is going to happen will happen before a new day dawns. We add the code word Oriana to our character sheet now, whatever that will do. Then you cannot delay here, she says urgently. What part can I play? What can I do to help? What Oriana has that you need is inside information. Your body lies in the bier, still closed. Well, still clothed, but you notice with the Blessed Blade Nightslayer does not lie with it. Will you ask your sister whether she knows where the sword has been taken, about Chamberlain Unthank, or whether there is anyone else who can help you?
Well, let's ask where the sword's been taken, because isn't that, you know, what Dad said?
I think he was asking us to go find a sword that was at the chapel, but I don't know if it was that sword. So that was the one that we had with us when we turned up in the first place. But I don't know. Do you know what happened to the sword Nightslayer, you ask? I had it with me when I was so cruelly struck down on the road to Sleeth. I saw the knights return with your body, carrying it on a makeshift stretcher, while I watched from my apartment in the east wall. Four carried the stretcher, another followed behind, carrying something cruciform in shape, wrapped in an oilskin. I believe that this was your blessed blade. So where is it now, you press her? The knight took it into the catacombs below. It lies somewhere down there even now. So we can either ask her for more information, bid her farewell and be on our way and head down to the catacombs, or we can leave the chapel and explore the inner ward further.
Let's head into the catacombs, I think.
I think that's a good choice.
I think we may have to break soon, because it's dinner time here and I need to cook for the children.
Well, I was going to say, this has been going on for quite some time. Do you want to have a pod your own adventure first and leave this one on a cliffhanger?
Dun dun dun!
Right. Next week, we will conclude this.
Was that the sound of you slamming the book?
That was the sound of me slamming the book. It's okay, I did make a note of what passage we were going on to.
Okay.
Ooh, spooky. This one's actually this is good. I like how unrelentingly high fantasy it is. Like,
yes, but every time I start getting too scared, I just think about Baron Blood, and then, you know, I get a little relief.
He is my favourite. I love the Baron of Blood.
No, not Baron of Blood, just Baron Blood.
Baron Blood. It's a good name. It's also a good name to have, like, on the back of a leather jacket spelled out in rhinestones.
Yeah. Like the Death just, Acolyte.
Like the Death Acolyte. Oh, man.
Lord of the Wild Hunt.
Right, so I don't think we should read through the exciting deaths in this one just yet. I don't think we should read through some of the... We should do a book report yet, because obviously we haven't finished it. What we can do is go through another book that I've got here by my side, Beneath a Nightmare Castle, because I'm sure that the people at home are still hungry for blood. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to find a death here quickly. Read it out, and then we'll bid goodbye.
Okay.
Hang on a second. Alright, found one. You have fallen into a very deep hole. You seem to fall forever, and as you tumble through the whistling gulf, you catch glimpses of the huge stone slab, slowly grinding back into place across the ever-diminishing sliver of light far away above you. It shuts, and you carry on plummeting in complete darkness.
You're about to lose consciousness when you are smashed against the rock floor. That's just nasty.
That was like more depressing than anything that just happened in the necromancy book.
Well, that was like an actual death you don't come back from. Okay. I guess just.
Yeah, I have to wonder. So this story that we've been working on, is this the fastest death that's ever happened in a podcast?
I suppose before the actual events of the book, maybe. But also, I can't really blame you for that one either. So. Yes. That was one of the quickest ways we died, I believe. But yeah, thank you for listening, everybody. We will reach a gripping conclusion on the next episode. It may be over really quickly, so I may have to prepare a second book. Who knows? Like I said, I haven't read the book all the way through. Thank you so much for listening. Really do appreciate everybody that talks about the show on Twitter and tells their friends about it as well. Like, that just warms my heart. Amy, where mm-hmm. can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter is the best place. I always go by Mavrim, MAEVRIM.
Okay. Thank you very much. And worldsonline.com?
Shardsonline.com.
Shardsonline. Sorry, yes. God. Worlds That's Online okay. is completely different. I'm really quite tired and hungry.
Yeah, I'm right with you.
I think we should cut here and we'll say goodbye to the lovely people at home and then let's both go get something to eat.
Bye!
Bye!